Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. This week I was joined by Matt Tynan from 48 Minutes of Hell, the ESPN Spurs blog. He's been covering the Spurs for quite some time. He is on Twitter. You can follow him at Matthew_Tynan, T-Y-N-A-N. We talked about a little bit about the Spurs, but we talked a lot about the Western Conference, how interesting it is. We recorded this around the same time that the Rondo trade to Dallas occurred, so we talked about the implications of that. And a good hour of basketball talk, so hope you enjoy. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you coming on to talk some Spurs. And so I kind of want to jump. The Blazers and Spurs already played this week, right. But I want to jump into the Spurs game last night. Everyone was calling it the game of the year. What'd you think?
I can't really argue with that. That was a pretty incredible. It was like shot after shot after shot. It was one of those weird games where everyone looked tired. Danny Green played 52 minutes. Tim Duncan played 48 minutes. Monta Ginobili played 41 minutes. The Grizzlies were coming off of a back-to-back, or they played the night before against Golden State, the best team in the league, and they beat them. Then they come into San Antonio and play like that. Legs were tired, but people were hitting shots, man. You know, in particular, the Gasol three off the glass and then the Tim Duncan fadeaway from, 21 feet at the top of the key that looked almost exactly like the one he hit against the Lakers, and that was then followed by Derek Fisher's .4 shot. But yeah, it was just a ton of impressive shot making, a ton of kind of wild plays in different portions of or the latter parts of the game. And the NBA has been a lot of fun this year, but triple overtime between those two teams, I think that probably is at the top of the list at this point.
Yeah. I watched some of that last night. After I got home from the Blazer game, I couldn't watch the whole thing. I still got triple overtime to watch. I did watch the triple overtime, cause we had it on live on Press Row, and, yeah, there was some that was just a great game.
Those are the great nights where you're at a game, but they have the monitors along Press Row, and you're kind of back and forth. I mean, I know we live in this insane, ADD, nonstop information and content all in our face, but it's so great to be able to sit on Press Row to be at a game live and to be able to see all the other stuff that's going on around the league. So, certainly know that feeling.
Yeah, that was it was just really fun to be able to see all that. And I'm looking at the box right now. I mean, Courtney Lee played 52, almost 53 minutes.
Yeah. When you play 63 minute basketball game, the minutes got to come from somewhere. And remember, the Spurs didn't have Tony Parker last night. They didn't have Kawhi Leonard. It was funny to look that it's one of those games where you look at the starting lineup, you see that, Kyle Anderson started, but he only played 13 minutes. On a normal night, you'd think 13 minutes for a rookie on the Spurs, this super deep, roster, that sounds good. But then you look at it in context and see that he played 13 of the 63 minutes. I don't even remember him playing, outside of early in the first half and early in the second half, but a lot of minutes last night, and you kind of got to wonder, Spurs Blazers tomorrow, what Pop might be thinking in terms of potential rest scenarios. It's kind of funny to think along those lines, given the fact that the Spurs have a day off to rest, but man, 38-year-old going 48 minutes and Manu, who's 37 going for 41 minutes, and he's not built for those sort of minutes. He's kind of been a max out at 30 to 35 guy for a while now, but it'll be interesting to see, because they got they got the Blazers tomorrow night, and then they got the Mavericks in Dallas on Saturday. And speaking of the Mavericks, just made a little move, didn't they?
Yeah, they made a little move. I guess before we get to the Blazers and the Spurs, I mean, we have to talk about the Rondo trade. Woj tweeted that Rondo is going to be traded from the Celtics finally after, I don't know, like 8 years of trade talks, it seems like.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I don't know how long it's been. It's been like since Rondo got to Boston, and then being traded to the Mavericks for reportedly Brendan Wright, Jameer Nelson, Jay Crowder, and a couple of picks. All right, well, yeah. So I guess if they didn't have enough reason to rest guys against Dallas, who took them to 7 games last year, now that they've added Rondo, maybe they bench the guys to get ready for that game, since they've never seen that Dallas team yet, assuming he's cleared.
I mean, so Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker have both already been listed as out tomorrow. So Kawhi and Tony are out against the Blazers. The thing about, you know, and I think it's a little bit of a misconception in general when it comes to the Spurs and their sort of resting situations and scenarios. They don't really take into account, and I say really, they never do. They don't take into account the quality of the opponent that they're playing. And where they're playing, whether it's the first night of the back-to-back or the second, they will almost always play guys on the first night of a back-to-back. And if they choose to rest them, excuse me, if they choose to rest them or play them, you know, whatever ends up happening, if they choose to rest them, it almost always comes on the second night of a back-to-back. But, you know, given the high minute count that they put up last night, I think that this might be a scenario where. And again, I don't think they'll look at this and say, we'd rather play these guys against the Mavericks. I just think that this is a situation where they might look at the minute count from a Wednesday night game that went 3 overtimes. And again, I listed the minute counts: Duncan at 48, Danny Green at 52, Manu Ginobili at 41. I mean, there might be a situation where they say, hey, you know what? We might want to give them an extra night off. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. It's always kind of a fool's errand to try to guess what's going on in Greg Popovich's mind. But you know, if I had to answer that question, I don't think they're going to take that into account. In fact, I would say that they probably wouldn't be quite as afraid to and not that they're afraid in the first place, but I don't think that they're going to care too much that they have a new guy like Rondo, because obviously. You could also make the argument that Dallas is going to have to – it's going to take a few weeks to integrate a guy like that who is a high usage, you know, dribbles the ball around a lot, at least in terms of what he used to do or what he's done in Boston over the last several years. So I don't think they're going to take that into account. I would say that they're going to just approach it as they normally do. These games, especially in December, you know, November, December, January, these games are fairly unimportant in terms of the big picture for San Antonio. So yeah, I think they're going to approach this how they typically do.
It was funny to me. At least I was amused a little bit when, you know, you're talking about how they do the rest and how they almost always rest on the second night of a back-to-back in back-to-back situations. This one being a unique one with the triple overtime game, but the fans in Portland had booed Popovich, and some people on Twitter were saying that it was because they benched their guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd think after a certain point, you know, it's been at least 4 seasons of this type of behavior, no?
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's been going on for a while. Yeah.
Right, it's been going on for a while, and maybe we should just let our consumers know, or at least I'm going to let the Blazers consumers know that maybe look at the Spurs schedule the next time they come to town.
Well, so every single time the Spurs play in Portland, they're playing on the second night of a back-to-back. Like it for some reason that was sticking out of my head. So I went back and I looked at the numbers, and counting the other night, 8 of the last 10 trips to Portland have come on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, I can't get mad at Portland fans for booing them for not playing their guys. But man, it's incredible how often they're in Portland on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, I don't know how to treat that situation. The Spurs are going to do that quite often. They are going to sit guys on the second night of a back-to-back, probably more often than they don't. A lot of it has to do with minutes from the previous night. Like, you know, if they blow someone out and Tim Duncan plays 20 minutes or something, there's a good chance he'll play the next night. But, you know, when you look at these games where the Spurs are sitting guys in Portland, it's always because they played the night before. There's a crazy stat was like Tony Parker hasn't won a regular season game in which he played in Portland since like 2007, 2008. Like, it's been that long since a Spurs team has won in Portland at full strength during the regular season. So, you know, I can't get mad or upset with fans for booing this sort of methodology, this sort of strategy that Greg Popovich uses. But it's worked really, really well for them, and these are a bunch of really old dudes that he's trying to take care of. So, you know, I don't think they're not going to change their ways. They're not going to just start playing guys out of nowhere. So it's probably just something that, hey, you gotta accept. If they're coming in on the second night of a back-to-back, hey, maybe don't go buy tickets. I know that's kind of a crappy way to look at it, but it's kind of on you. You assume the liability in that situation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the schedule here. It looks like their next one is not on the second night of a back-to-back.
Hey, look at that.
So it's Wednesday, February 25th, and I think it's during the rodeo road trip.
It is during the rodeo road trip.
Yeah. So that should be a time, and that's also like right after the All-Star break, so they'll have – with this new All-Star break, they'll have like a week of rest.
Right. Yeah. So they might actually be, and again, the Spurs haven't been full strength all year. By then they might be completely full strength, like Patty Mills back and everything. So, hopefully by that time, everything will be completely normal and we'll get, you know, we'll get another look at Spurs Blazers, maybe the first full strength one we've seen since the Western Conference semis last year.
Yeah, that series was a pretty good beatdown, but I'm sure, yeah, that was a pretty good beatdown. But yeah, I'm sure, you know, the Blazers would definitely like to measure themselves up with a full strength Spurs team.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, you know, this Rondo stuff is crazy. I mean, I know we're talking about the implications with regards to the Spurs resting guys, but how do you see it playing out in the West? The West is already kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to look ahead, and especially this year, you're already. I mean, we've talked about, you know, the depth of the Western Conference this season. You know, it's amazing how well Oklahoma City is playing. Russell Westbrook comes back off of knee surgeries and just goes crazy. It's unbelievable. I've never seen a human being like that guy. Kevin Durant comes back, and I know he's on a little bit of a minutes count, but he has been great in his return. They're playing awesome defense. It's kind of funny that we were, you know, for a while wondering, hey, when these guys come back, are they going to be good enough to get into the playoff hunt? And here they, I mean, they're already right there. So it's becoming, you know, can the Thunder get into that sort of home court area of the postseason? But I mean, look at the West, man. Like, look at how well these teams are playing. The Grizzlies, the Warriors, the Rockets. You have a Dallas team that goes and gets Rajon Rondo. You know, I don't know what Rondo's gonna be. It's been a while since we've seen kind of that old the Rondo of old.
And playing in games that matter.
Well, then that's the other point here is that, like, look, you go get Rondo. He hasn't been great this year. I mean, he's been like horrific from the free throw line. He hasn't been shooting well. But how much of that do you attribute to playing on a team that's just not very good, that doesn't have a ton of talent? He's not necessarily a guy that you're going to put the ball in his hands and say, hey, go get us 20 every night. He's a guy who depends on really good players around him to set them up for, you know, better shots, for high efficiency or highly efficient looks. And I mean, you know, at the surface, you look at the team that he's going to and look at all the shooting that's around him and the kind of players that the Mavericks have on the offensive end. I mean, they're already the best offensive team in basketball by the numbers. Certainly things are going to change a little bit. They kind of have a free-ranging offense right now that doesn't necessarily have that one guy who controls the ball the majority of the time. But now they have that guy, or at least that's what he's been in the past. So it's going to be different. I mean, Monte's been a high usage player for them over the last 2 years, or since he's arrived in Dallas. And that's going to change a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see how a guy like Rondo and a guy like Ellis mesh, because, you know, Monte's not a spot up shooter. He's improved in that capacity, and he's kind of developed a little bit more of a well-rounded game in Dallas, but it's going to be interesting to see. I think that this could potentially boost Dallas up a notch. I don't know if it necessarily puts them in that top championship tier, but it certainly puts them right there, at least to be incredibly competitive. But man, the Western Conference is just it's a monster. The top seven teams in that conference, I can see you can make an argument for coming out of the West, you know?
Yeah, you definitely could. And Dallas, and Rondo, I guess, kind of does fit right into how I've felt Dallas has been all year, is that Dallas is the rest of the Western teams seem like they're playing a more straight up game, and Dallas likes to get like really weird.
Yeah, they are.
It just seems like they're just a really funky, kind of weird team. Like, they don't really play defense. Like, and I know Rondo is supposed to be a guy to come in there and defend other point guards. And maybe he hasn't wanted to play as much hard defense considering the team that he's on and how bad they were. But, yeah, you know, like you're saying, I agree that it takes them up a notch, but where are they still in the West? It's so hard.
I don't know. And you know, Rondo does, he has the reputation of being a defender, but I'm not sure how accurate that is in like systematically. He's very good at getting steals. I don't know if he's a guy who's gonna, you know, tie that defense together, kind of make a string from the perimeter down to the rim with Tyson Chandler, but that'll be interesting to see. You're right, they're really funky. They do a lot of different stuff. They've really, especially starting last year, they threw out a bunch of really random lineups, and they played multiple styles, I think, and they're even deeper this season, so they have even more flexibility. That's going to be a really fun team to watch, man. I think that for sure I'm going to be tuning in to watch them a lot more than I have been. And look, I mean, that's a team that I've become certainly familiar with over the last several years, but it's going to be really interesting to watch. Now, that starting five is like Xbox material. Like, everyone's going to jump on Xbox and play with the Mavericks. I mean, Monte Ellis, Rajon Rondo, Chandler Parsons, Dirk, Tyson Chandler. Ooh, I mean, it's just on paper, man. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, but look at all the ground they have to make up just to get into the top tier of the Western Conference. It's going to be crazy to watch going forward. I love Brandon Wright, and he's been playing so well for that team this year. So, you know, this is going to put even more pressure on Tyson Chandler to stay healthy for the season, and yeah, we'll see, man. I mean, they have to assume a little risk in order to bring on Rondo. But, you know, hey, if it works out and everyone kind of stays healthy, they might look really good by the time the playoffs roll around.
They have a really scary potentially scary lineup. So they Boston gave Dwight Powell in return.
Right.
Because, I mean, we're talking about Brendan Wright and how much of a stud Brendan Wright is. I think for a while he was leading the league in PER or something crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you don't have a real backup center, that's a major problem in the West. That's a major problem in the West. I mean, think about facing the Spurs or facing the Rockets or facing the Blazers.
Right.
Lots of teams that have, when healthy, have very good big men. That you're counting on Tyson Chandler to be the defensive player of the year, Tyson Chandler, and then also have him just not get hurt at all.
Yeah.
And Dwight Powell he's a second year guy. I've never really seen him play that much. He's 6'11", 240. I guess they're going to need Dwight Powell. I guess they believe in Dwight Powell because they don't have any other backup big men.
I think he's a rookie, isn't he? Yeah.
A rookie. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know anything about, I mean, I, other I, than the fact I know who he is, but I don't know anything about the way how this guy's going to be able to contribute. And I'm sure that he's probably not going to be playing much, right away, but you know, you trade away a backup like that. You made the point that it's important. It's important to have a backup center, in especially in the Western Conference, and especially when you have a guy who, over the last several years, at least last couple of years, has been somewhat injury prone in Tyson Chandler. But look, the thing about this trade and the timing of it is it's still really early. We're just a little more than a quarter of the way through the season. It's what, 2 months left until the trade deadline. If we're looking at it from that perspective, you know, Dallas might not even be done dealing. I mean, at a certain point, they're not going to have the sort of pieces to just keep throwing away. You know, they have a guy like Greg Smith, who's played meaningful NBA minutes in the past. In Houston in particular, he hasn't really played a whole lot this season, but you know, that's a guy whose role might increase. They're probably going to have to mix and match, you know, maybe they're going to have lineups where Dirk is playing center and they're going small with whoever, Al-Farouq Aminu at power forward or something like that. I don't know. I think that whenever you trade away, several pieces who were actually part of your rotation, when you give up three pieces from your rotation to get one in return, anytime that happens, you're gonna have to deal with some mixing and some matching and some testing, a time frame where you're gonna be testing this stuff out, and so I think that's gonna be part of the intrigue of watching the Mavericks over the next several weeks, or you know, the rest of the season really. So who knows, man? Maybe they make another move down the line. Maybe they try to acquire somebody before the trade deadline to help, bolster their front court. Because you don't, obviously, not only do you not want to put pressure on Tyson Chandler to play big minutes and stay healthy all year, you gotta keep Dirk healthy. He's obviously an older guy too. So you're looking now without Brandon Wright, you lose athleticism in the front court. And you are now depending more so on a couple of old guys. So this isn't, I don't think that this is a home run here. I think it could potentially turn out that way. But I think that there are certainly questions in this, and, you know, we'll see how Rondo ends up, you know, panning out. He hasn't exactly been too hot this year in Boston, but like we said earlier, that might have been a product of his surroundings. I think most people are looking at this as a plus for the Mavericks. So and I'm kind of with them. I think that it could be really great a couple of months from now, but certainly not the undeniable answer to the equation right now. So we'll see going forward.
I do really like the trade, but it seems like the more we've talked about it, the more we are both a little bit like, oh, well, I don't know exactly. Because Rondo, as a, and we maybe, I've talked about this with a couple of, friends of mine about point guards. Like, is, I mean, Rondo's good and there are really good West point guards, but do point guards ultimately win you championships? I
I mean,
mean,
yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know.
look, and you just brought it up. Like, look how many point guards are in the Western Conference. Look how many fantastic point guards are in the Western Conference. We saw it a couple of years ago. Derrick Rose was the MVP of the league. He goes up against the Heat. LeBron clamps down on him defensively in the fourth quarter of those games, and he couldn't do anything. Like, there, I think. You raise a legitimate question, like how much does this boost the Mavericks? I don't know. I don't know. Like, in the NBA, we get so attached to individual names. We get so attached to the individual stars. And that, because look, I mean, the NBA in general is built on that. The Spurs might be, people might look at the Spurs as an exception, but not really. They needed Kawhi Leonard to be a star in the finals last year. They've won with three legitimate stars, one, ultra mega superstar, one of the best, arguably top five players of all time in Tim Duncan. Even the Spurs, this team first sort of squad, like they relied on star power to win the championships that they've got in their back pocket. So I think we look at the NBA like this through kind of that stars perspective. And Rondo, whether he's still that guy, made himself into a star. And what was that because he, was he benefiting from guys like KG and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce? Of course he was, but he was also damn good in his own right. Whether he's still that guy off of surgery, is obviously we have yet to see that. But we've already hit on it a couple of times. It's tough to tell when you look at that team that he's playing with, in Boston. He's going to a team that is 20 times better than the one that's in Boston right now, so offensively especially. So I don't think I don't let, let's put it this way. I don't think that the Dallas Mavericks are suddenly going to become an offensively challenged team. I think they're going to score a million points. And Rondo is a, if anything, he's a high IQ guy. He might not be a great shooter, but we know he's a great passer. We know he's brilliant with the ball in his hand, so I don't think that's gonna hurt Dallas offensively. My only concern, and I'm kind of going back and forth to this, but or back and forth from this, but my concern would be that front court, because Brandon Wright was having a really, really effective season, and you brought up, what is more important, a star point guard or front court depth, especially in the Western Conference, where you got to go up against guys like the Marc Gasols and the Blake Griffins and the Tim Duncans and even a team like the Thunder. You have to have depth at the forward and center positions to be able to deal with guys like not just to keep guys like Durant and Westbrook from getting to the rim at will. But Steven Adams is a pain in the butt, man. And I mean, Serge Ibaka is difficult to keep off the glass. So, every one of those top teams in the Western Conference has some sort of presence in the middle, and it's got to be tough for Dallas to look at that and say, okay, I understand we're getting a guy like Rondo, who is in the past at least has been looked at as a top five point guard in the league, but it's got to be tough to give up a young guy like Brandon Wright.
Another team I wanted to talk about, which actually for Blazer fans who might be listening to this, if they haven't seen the Rockets this year, you live in Houston and you've seen a little bit more of the Rockets. You were talking about some of the things that have been going on with them so far this season on Twitter last night. But I know Dwight has missed a lot of time, and I know that a lot of people have been saying that James Harden's actually playing defense this year. But And I know they swapped Trevor Ariza for Chandler Parsons, but what's going on with the Rockets? How have they been able to win so many games despite Dwight missing so much time, Terrence Jones missing a lot of time?
Yeah. Typically, like, if you looked at that team and you – over the offseason, I think the idea was, well, man, you know, they lose a guy like Parsons. They trade Jeremy Lin. They trade Omer Asik. Like, they got rid of these guys and – didn't really bring a lot of high-profile guys back. But the pieces that they brought in have really helped aid in or at least cover up the holes and the issues that they had with this roster. They've played – Dwight Howard's only played in 12 of their 24 games, and they are 19-5 this season. And the main reason for that, and it's kind of – funny to look back at this and it's funny to look at this team and say, hey, what are they doing well in? And Dwight Howard has only played in half of their games. Well, they're a top three defensive team right now. You see, which is kind of mind boggling considering, like I just said, they're the second best defense in the league per NBA.com, 96.8 points allowed per 100 possessions. And they've done so with Dwight Howard playing only 12 games. James Harden, look, I think a lot has been made about his defensive leap. He has been objectively has been better defensively, but that's not like that difficult to do considering how just freaking putrid he was last season. Like, didn't even try the majority of the time. It's amazing what a guy like Ariza, who's played wonderful defense this year for that team, it's amazing what one really solid to elite perimeter defender can do. He allows James Harden to play off the ball or play in passing lanes or not have to actively defend the other team's, you know, best offensive option. They can hide him. They can do different things. They can make it to where what used to be a true weakness, because, you know, Chandler Parsons can play, but let's not confuse him for being a good defender. You had a perimeter that consisted of Harden and Parsons last year, and it was like a turnstile. I mean, I think people may even have underrated the Rockets defensively even last year and the year before. But you know, when Dwight Howard's at the rim, you're gonna have at least some semblance of defense. Now they've added a guy like Trevor Ariza to the fold, and they have that connection between the perimeter and the basket. They have a guy defending the rim. They have a guy who's able to lock down and you know, give the opponent's best scorer a really difficult time on any given night. And then on top of that, the Rockets have been okay defensively. They're still kind of one of these teams that you, obviously we know a lot about their style. They run and gun. They shoot a lot of threes. They try to get to the rim. They don't shoot anything in the mid range. But really, man, it's been the Rockets' defense. Their offense is actually, in terms of points per 100 possessions, in terms of offensive efficiency, they're pretty mediocre. But you know, obviously, I think that might be the side of the ball that's been most affected by some of these injuries. Obviously, at least up to this point, it's been their defense. Their defense has been pretty remarkable considering the fact that they have been without Dwight Howard. And I think, and I just honestly, I do not think Trevor Ariza has gotten enough attention in that capacity. He has taken on a huge responsibility. I think he's been one of these guys people label as a contract year guy, where he only really plays well in the final year of contracts. But Houston gave him a deal this summer after they couldn't, they refused to give Chandler the big one, or at least match the offer that Dallas made to Chandler Parsons. And it's paid off. They look like a better team this season than they were last year. And it's because their defense is now reaching elite levels rather than kind of middling in that 12 to 15 range. If their offense gets going, if they really start to boost their production on that side of the ball, it's going to be damn near impossible to stop that team later on this season.
I felt like the idea of Houston was always very, very scary, but it seems like, you know, last year, but, you know, you talked about Parsons. Blazer fans obviously will remember that Parsons let Lillard come wide open for that shot that won the series against Houston. But Houston really didn't play very good defense at all during that series. And, I mean, it looked like, you know, Portland was, you know, a lot stronger in that end, even when they put Ashik in the starting lineup. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that they've been able to do that without Dwight Howard, and also, I mean, frankly, you know, pulling a lot of these guys out of nowhere, like Tarik Black, I had no idea who that guy was, and he's played in 22 games, you know, and, you know, Monty Yunus, who was basically buried on the bench the last few years, has played in 24 games.
And he's been a guy who's been really a nice surprise for them. You know, when they brought him in, when he came into the league, he was sort of billed as a floor spacer, kind of a stretch four type of guy. You know, he never really has turned into that. Like, he'll hit a three here and there. He'll shoot, you know, one or two a night, and he might make one every other game or something. But he's really developed in the post, and he's a big dude. You know, this is a guy who's right at that 7 foot mark, and can produce in the post. And in Dwight Howard's absence, he's been very good. He's been that secondary, or, you know, maybe not even secondary, but he's been that extra, that tertiary option for guys whenever they need scoring in the post. And it's been huge for Houston. I mean, you just brought it up. It's been these guys that you really haven't heard of that are giving them time, that are giving them, you know, quality minutes, and young guys like Isaiah Cannon and and you even have guys like Jason Terry coming off the bench. Like, he's hitting two threes a game. He's been a complete ghost in the league for the last couple of years. Like, I cannot believe he's playing 25 minutes a night, and he's hitting two threes a night at nearly 40%. You know, it's just these guys that they're finding, you know, they're bringing in and piecing this thing together after what some looked at as a pretty disastrous offseason. And again, they look better this year. I think they're more well-rounded. Kevin McHale is doing a better job at putting these guys in positions to succeed. I think he's been under a lot of criticism the last couple of years as a coach who wasn't really able to boost that team to the next level. And look, again, we keep kind of hitting on this. There's a long way to go. We'll see how the Rockets, how things happen with the Rockets down the stretch of the NBA season. And as the playoffs come along, and as it starts to turn into more of a half court game, that's kind of where they flailed in the past, and where they just couldn't execute. They'd go into these ISO situations, and it would just kill them in those playoff games and those half court sets. But again, when you can play defense at a top three level, you can beat anybody. So if this team is healthy, and look, they haven't been shy about letting people know that they're always looking to make moves. Like, Daryl Morey wants another star in there. So,
well, they were the team that reportedly dropped out of the Rondo sweepstakes.
And then, you know, Mark Stein reported today that they moved on from Rondo, and they're now they're now looking to go after Goran Dragic to bring him back to Houston for the eighth time. But seriously, it would be Goran Dragic's, third time in Houston. Yeah. So, you know, if they're able to bring in a guy like that, you know, who knows, they could take another step. But it's been a very interesting team. They've really pieced it together with some young guys that no one's ever heard of, and it's working so far. And a lot of that has to do with the help defensively on the perimeter and the development of Donatas Mata-Yunas, especially in Dwight Howard's absence.
Just a quick fact check on our part. It would actually just be his second tour of duty, but it would just be him going
second
back.
Tour.
And, yeah, okay. So him okay. going back and forth. He will have played for only two teams. And so if he goes to Houston, which
I was actually looking at this today. So he was drafted by the Spurs. He was traded from the Spurs to the Suns. The Suns traded him to Houston. He was let go, signed in Phoenix, and now maybe he's traded back to Houston. Yeah, so you're right. Second tour of duty, but still, what a weird career for that guy.
Yeah, and poor Phoenix. They had everything go so well for them last year. They were everyone's favorite team, and then
yeah. It's you really wonder for. And look, that's another team I think could pick it up and really get back to that point again. A long way to go this season, but yeah, that's a weird situation, and you kind of wonder when a team like that I mean, you remember how many people at the beginning of last season were picking them to finish like last in the West.
Like, yeah, they were like going to be like Sixers bad.
Yeah, like people looked at that roster and said this team's going to be terrible, but they're set up for the future. They have all these draft picks going forward. They have a chance to be awesome. And then they just kind of blow people out of the water with the style that they used. Like there is that danger of overachieving too early and getting that sort of taste at success that maybe you're not ready for at this point. And I don't know if that makes sense or not. I think that
I see what you're saying.
And I'm not even talking about like expectations or anything like that. But if you have this team that really overachieves and you have these internal expectations, like, okay, we did that last year. It was a really kind of crazy run that we went on. People weren't necessarily ready for the way we played. And then you go into this season, you bring in a couple new pieces. You lose a guy like Channing Frye, who was so great for their floor spacing and such a fantastic shooter. You have these little subtle changes, and you have these internal expectations of getting to the postseason. And then if things aren't going the right way, or if you're not performing the way that you expected to, like, does it sink into your psyche a little bit as a young team? If things aren't going the right way, are they mentally tough enough to overcome that as a young team? I think Jeff Hornacek is a fantastic coach. He's one of the guys that, you know, you really loved to talk to when that team came to town last season. I think they're going to be okay going forward. I think they're going to be right there as a playoff contender. But, man, the West, you know, look, they won, 48 games last year and couldn't get into the postseason. And I think it might even be crazier this year. I think you might win 50 games and not get into the postseason this year. So
it's so stupid. It's honestly so stupid that teams like the freaking Pacers have a chance to make the playoffs, who are, you know, props to Frank Vogel for coaching that team and having them even be competitive. But like, there's no reason for that team to be in the playoffs over a 48 win Western Conference team, whoever it is, whether it's New Orleans or, you know, imagine Anthony Davis right. Not being in the playoffs, but the Pacers are. Like, I mean, we've talked about that. That's been a big topic on the internet. I know Zach Lowe wrote a lot about that. But it's just crazy, the disparity. And now, you know, Boston trains Rondo, and I mean, they're even worse.
Well, like for instance, San Antonio right now is the seventh seed in the West, and they're on pace to win more than 53 games as the seventh seed. I mean, it's insane. New Orleans right now is 12-12, and they're the eighth seed. Oklahoma City is 12-13, and they're the 10th seed. But you'd have to expect that Oklahoma City is going to go tearing through that bubble of playoff teams, you know, potential playoff teams. And will surpass teams like New Orleans. There might be in the pretty near future, there might be a situation where the Western Conference is like locked, unless obviously, you know, players get injured. But once Oklahoma City breaks that barrier and gets into the postseason, like, we might be looking at Golden State, Memphis, Houston, Portland, Clippers, Mavericks, Spurs, Thunder, and literally look at the rest of the Western Conference and say there's no way that any of those teams are going to win enough games going forward to surpass any of the teams who are in the top eight right now. I mean, I can completely see that happening, because when you look at the Western Conf, the rest of the West, New Orleans, Phoenix, Sacramento, Denver, well, obviously, I'm not even going to go past that.
No, yeah.
but you can't see any of those teams challenging the top, the 8 best teams in the conference right now. I mean, this thing, in the next couple of weeks, as competitive as the Western Conference is and as unbelievable as it is, it might, the top 8 seeds might be, you know, not decided in terms of like what order they're going to be in, but those top 8 teams might be playoff locks by the, you know, I don't know, maybe a month from now.
The one thing I will say, I know the Bogut news came out today that he got a PRP injection, and that obviously is a big deal for the Western Conference, but I think the Lopez injury is going to have a major effect on the Blazers. They beat the Bucks last night, and Giannis got hurt.
Yeah.
He had like 10 points. He was getting to the rim basically whenever he wanted, and Lopez isn't there right now, and they've got this tough stretch where they start in San Antonio, then they go to New Orleans, Houston, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
They've got a pretty good home schedule after that, but you know, they are only right now they're 7 games up in the loss column in the Northwest Division. And we were talking about the Thunder maybe getting that home court, but you know, the Blazers, if they slip a little bit, like, that's going to become a real race. And, you know, what was probably unthinkable, Oklahoma City could definitely – I'm definitely not putting out the possibility that Oklahoma City wins that division in the end, especially with this Lopez injury. This road trip was already hard, but without Lopez, I mean, the Blazers were not a good team when they didn't have Robin Lopez 2 years ago.
Right.
They legitimately were not a good team. So – it's going to be interesting to watch, but, Matt, yeah, anything left to say? I mean,
I was going to ask was, you know, obviously like the addition of Robin Lopez last year was so great for that team. It allowed, I mean, you guys know this obviously, but just the ability to put LaMarcus in that 4 spot and take him out of the center position. Do you think he's out till what, early to mid February, they're saying something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, do you think that this team, as competitive as the Western Conference is, and you've already mentioned it, like, are they happy with Cayman Freeland, or do you think that they're going to go try to move somebody, to try to bring someone else in?
You know, and the thing is, I don't necessarily know. You know, they've got lots of guys on their team. I mean, they've got Claver who doesn't play at all.
Right.
He's never ever activated. They do have, you know, they've got Freeland, they've got Leonard. You know, it depends on who
anything?
They'd be willing. Leonard?
Is Myers Leonard anything? Is he, like, is he, if you look at him, like, is he a serviceable player going forward?
I haven't honestly seen enough of him play
to give a
real distinction. He was, they put him in against Chicago because, Joel Freeland, who normally plays those backup big positions alongside Kamen, got kind of worked by Mirotić in their first meeting, and then stuck Myers on him, who's a little bit more athletic, and they were like heckling him in Chicago, and apparently he got nervous, and like the one shot he took was like he like banked it off. He was like super nervous, and the bull, he was like a minus 16 or something in like 5 minutes. So like, I mean, that was terrible. So. But, you know, he got a start against the Nets, who were terrible also, so and they won that game. You know, he changed positions to power forward this year, and they've unleashed him as a stretch 4. Oh.
I'm looking at this. Like, he's shooting – he's only played in 8 games, but he's shot a 3-pointer at least 1 in every game. And he's made 4 of them.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, no, he's that was I mean, last year they ran, whenever he did play, they would sometimes run like real like pin downs for him to come off a catch and shoot the ball, because he's not a good post up player. Like, if you gave him the ball, he'd turn it over on the post, you know, almost guaranteed. I mean, that's a little harsh, but it's probably not that bad really, but his shooting is just so much better than his post play. And you know, that's what they've gone to. But yeah, I mean, you look at their team, they really like their wings. Their Allen Crabbe and CJ McCollum have played really well. Thomas Robinson, though, he had a really good game. He has an expiring contract. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. I don't know how, you know, you could which teams maybe out there that have a serviceable center that would like a player like a Robinson, or you know, an energy
or how
guy.
Many teams are like willing to give up that backup center, because we just right. we talked about it with the Mavericks, like how valuable those big men are in the league right now.
We didn't even talk about the Grizzlies.
Oh man, that team, you know, and we can just hit on it really quickly. I mentioned it last night, and I someone told me I was sounding petty because they beat the Spurs, and it was not intended to be this way at all. I think the Grizzlies can beat anyone in the NBA except a healthy San Antonio team, just because of the matchups. Like the Spurs, just the way they match up when Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker are healthy, and obviously throw in a guy like Patty Mills, like it is just so difficult for that Grizzlies team to handle San Antonio. I mean, they went to three overtimes without Tony Parker and without Kawhi Leonard last night. It's obviously just a random regular season night, and that could have happened if those two guys were, you know, playing. This is more to say that that Memphis team is capable of winning the Western Conference, but it might take someone else knocking off the Spurs for them to get there. Otherwise, you know, Marc Gasol slimmed down and looks amazing. He is having the best year of his career on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Zebo looks a little bit, he looks reinvigorated or whatever. So we didn't get to talk about him, but they're good. We can just say that they're very, very good.
When I saw them, when they came to Portland, they beat the Blazers down like mm-hmm. pretty soundly. Yeah. And one thing that stood out to me, we were talking about the importance of backup bigs. We didn't even mention the Clippers, who have Spencer Hawes, and like I don't really like the Clippers at all. Moving forward, but
I don't either, man. They're weird. I don't like their second unit. I think that they have these weird limitations in terms of their bench, in terms of areas of their defense. God, I mean, you can't leave DeAndre Jordan in games where, you know, a guy like a Greg Popovich will hack a Jordan or whatever the hell you want to call it. Well, I mean, it's just such a weirdly talented yet flawed roster.
Yeah, and back to real quick about DeAndre.
Yeah.
The Blazers also found a little loophole that I think Zach Lowe highlighted, and I actually asked Nicholas Batum about it. DeAndre in the last 2 minutes of a game can't even set a screen now because Batum.
Oh yeah,
he found this.
Awesome.
He found this loophole where if he just runs into him while he's setting a screen on a screen and roll, then DeAndre has to go to the foul line and take the foul shots anyway.
It's so smart. I literally, like, you know, I was reading that and I just literally kind of laughed out loud sitting at my computer because it's so brilliant. Like that is such a smart thing to do, because it makes him like literally useless.
That's like the one thing he can do. And, yeah. and that was even, Batum said it wasn't Stotts' idea. He just like, I'm just going to run into the screen and I'm just going to foul him like that. And yeah,
perfect.
It was pretty brilliant. But yeah. And Memphis has, they got Costa and John Luer who, can ball a little bit. Yeah, that was that game, that was a good matchup, but well, it was
real,
fun.
Real quick. It just came up on my timeline. We were talking about Dwight Powell earlier.
Uh-huh.
Josh Lewenberg, is the Raptors beat reporter for TSN Sports. He just tweeted, Canadian Dwight Powell has appeared in 5 NBA games. He's been traded 3 times. That's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
Well, now,
so that's who you're getting, Dallas. You're getting a journeyman, a rookie journeyman.
Wow, he's already been on more teams than Goran Dragic, and he's only He hasn't even played five games.
He's at a 5-3 games played to traded ratio. That's, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable.
Oh man. Well, all right. Thanks for coming on, Matt. It was fun to talk. It'll be fun to watch Blazers Spurs tomorrow, even if the Spurs aren't playing their guys. The Blazers don't have Blazers don't have Lopez, so you know, could be a crapshoot no matter what. So, all right. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, man. We'll talk to you later.